Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Hello, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Rick Hopkins, and it's good to have you with us today. This is the show following our monthly meeting, which is the third Tuesday of every month, and usually we tried to record that to bring you our guest speakers, and that's what we're going to do on today's show. The meeting was this past Tuesday, September the 19th. Our speakers were from America's Remedy, and it was John Ainsworth and Cliff Muncy. John is the founder of America's Remedy. It's a nonpartisan educational think tank whose focus through education and legal activism is to reestablish America and her demi-sovereign states on a free and constitutional foundation. As a strong advocate of a lawful constitutional government and passionate in his service to see America reclaimed, John took 2 years off of work in 1995 to research America's derailing. John has over 19 years of study and has been involved in over 15 court cases. In 1997, John was involved in reestablishing the de jure state of North Carolina. He has hosted and co-hosted a number of television and radio programs, and he has had numerous speaking engagements across the eastern U.S. And Cliff Muncy is Director of Media at America's Remedy. Well, those are our speakers for the show. We hope you enjoy the program. So now we join our pre-recorded program with John Ainsworth and Cliff Muncy.
My name is Cliff Muncy, and I'm the Director of Media for America's Remedy. And we're going to be talking a little bit about original nullification, a little different than something that you're used to, a blueprint to reestablish the states. I'll tell you a little bit about who we are. We're America's Remedy. Our mission is learning history to restore our future. America's Remedy is a nonpartisan educational think tank focused on reestablishing America and her demi-sovereign states on a free and constitutional foundation. Our primary goal through education is to ignite a peaceful counter-revolution among the American people and to reclaim our lawful states or body politics, which were annulled by the Second American Revolution, also known as the Reconstruction Acts. I'll tell you a little bit about our speaker and our founder, John Ainsworth. He's a husband and father of two. He took 2 years off of work in 1995 for study to try to figure out where America went off track. He has over 22 years of study. He's been involved in over 20 court cases, and he's been involved in a movement to reestablish the original state of North Carolina. He's been a host and co-host and guest on a number of talk shows and radio shows. And without further ado, I'd like to go ahead and introduce to you John Ainsworth.
Okay, well, again, I want to thank everyone for coming out. Like Cliff said, we're going to challenge you. What we have that's unique is a study it takes to get America back on its lawful foundation. I think we're all in here. We're all in a common cause. America is off its rails, is going in a direction that I think people my age, even younger, older, could have never possibly imagined 30 years ago where we're at. And what I'm here to tell you, what I want to teach you, is some of the things that we've got. The amount of information I'm going to give you is extremely limited of what we've got just because of the time limit we have. But what I want to do is give you a thumbnail sketch to look at how we got off the rails, and I'm going to present a legal argument of how do we get back our constitutional government. Hopefully I'll teach y'all things you've never seen before. Now, what our goal is to attack a single root violation of the Constitution to nullify all subsequent violations. So we're nullifiers. To nullify, you can only attack an unconstitutional act. If Congress has the authority to do something, you can't nullify it. So we are wanting to attack a single root violation, but we've got to find that violation. You know, there's 1,000 hacking at the branches of evil for one who is striking at the root. Right now, the system has got us so successfully divided, we have thousands hacking at little branches here and there and there. I want to get us focused on what is the root cause? Where did we go off the rails here in America? And we're going to provide an outline, and we're going to provide a historical and legal background of what happened. Cliff's going to be doing the remedy and progress made so far and proposals for a large-scale movement. And what we're going to focus on now is that. I want to tell you a little bit of my story. I started figuring out things were wrong around 1990. And it's like, something's not right here. It led me on a path. And I'm going to start taking you a little bit down that path to show you where I got my conclusions from and what led me down this path. This is a Senate report, 93-549. This was put out in November 1973. And the title of this is Emergency Power Statutes, Provisions of Federal Law, Now in Effect, Delegating to the Executive Extraordinary Authority in Times of National Emergency. And I'm just going to read from this first paragraph. Let's just highlight a couple things here. It says, a majority of the people of the United States have lived all their lives under emergency rule. For 40 years, freedoms and governmental procedures guaranteed by the Constitution have, in varying degrees, been abridged by laws brought into force by states of national emergency. How many people here were taught in school that we've lived all our lives under emergency rule? There's the United States Senate report. Do you think this is something that's worthwhile noting? Okay, this is them telling us about it. He says, and in the United States, actions taken by the government in times of great crisis have, from at least the Civil War, in an important way shaped the present phenomenon of a permanent state of national emergency. How many have been told we're in a permanent state of national emergency? And that from at least the Civil War, it's been going on. Well, this gives me an idea. Maybe we need to look at the Civil War, and maybe there's more that happened in that time frame. Is the United States Senate a reputable place to get information that's telling on itself? I know we don't have a lot of trust, but they're talking about some serious stuff here. This was not a junior report. This was Adlai Stevenson III, Charles Mathias, Frank Church were the committee members on this. This was the heavy hitters. And let's get another. The Williamsburg Resolve, this is the Republican Governor's Conference of 1994, and it says this. Here and in other colonial capitals, the nation's founders first debated the idea of independence and the fundamental principles of freedom. Then the challenge to the liberties of the people came from an arrogant, overbearing monarchy across the sea. Today, that challenge comes from our own federal government, a government that has defied and that now ignores virtually every constitutional limit fashioned by the framers to confine its reach and thus guard the freedoms of the people. How many people agree with that? Okay, this, upon two witnesses, we got two witnesses that say the federal government is not operating within its bounds and we're in a state of national emergency. Well, let's start doing a little bit of study. Let's just understand what a state is. What is a state? What's a state? What's a body politic? They're the same thing. A state is a politically organized body of people under a single government. A state is the people. The people are the state. The people are the body politic. We draft the Constitution, or a constitution for a government. That's a government for the people, a government for the state. And here's a little circular thing. The people are the body politic. The people are the sovereignty. The sovereignty resides in the body politic. The state government is the government of the people. The sovereignty resides in the state government. I mean, that's just the people and the state. How many people here feel the people of this state have control and sovereignty over what happens and what laws we're under versus what's forced upon us? Redefining marriage. These things, did the people of North Carolina say, we want to do that? Did the people of North Carolina say, we want to get rid of prayer in school? Did the people of North Carolina say, we want to get rid of the... No, all this stuff is forced upon us. And we want to see how this happened. And I'm going to show you it's done by an unconstitutional act. And this is a term that's passed, put out there a lot. Let's just define it. An unconstitutional act is not a law. It confers no rights. It imposes no duties. It affords no protection. It creates no office. It is in legal contemplation as inoperative as though it had never been passed. Therefore, an unconstitutional act purporting to create an office gives no validity to the acts of persons acting under color of its authority. And that's a Supreme Court case. Now again, what we're going to be looking for and what I'm pointing you people at is an unconstitutional act. We want to find one where we can get legal remedy. And that unconstitutional act has to injure us for us to have standing in court. And let's just look at standing. I'm not going to go through this entire thing. I got it off of Wikipedia just because I didn't want copyright infringements from LexisNexis and Black's Law and all that. And so basically, standing in court is the term of ability of a party to demonstrate to the court sufficient connection to and harm from the law or action challenged. Okay, so you have to be an injured party to have standing. You have to be able to get remedy from the court. You can't say, those people were injured, I want to have a court, I want to get a court ruling on it. You have to be injured. And so that's the question at the very end of this we want to ask. Who has standing to bring up the constitutional violations I'm going to show you? If the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do? How many people here believe our foundations have been destroyed in this country? Okay? Righteous, the morally right, justifiable, virtuous, justifiable. Okay? Oh man, what does the Lord require of you? To do justice, to love mercy, walk humbly with your God. We have to do justice. Not many times does the Bible tell us, what are you required to do? Do justice. So if we see an injustice, we have a duty as a morally right people to fix that. Now, I'm going to start showing you what our founders laid out and said would get the cat out of the bag. What is it that would allow the federal government to go from a limited federal government to an unlimited one? How many people feel that that change has happened? We've gone from a limited government to an unlimited one. Well, let's just read what James Madison had to say in the Federalist Papers. This is Federalist 39, and this is the Federalist Papers. They're deciding, do we have a national government or do we have a federal government? Now those terms are pretty much interchangeable. But then it was a big thing. Federal is federation. Nation is one. And what he's saying is that the Constitution is going to operate in a federal and a national aspect. The national aspects are the limited federal rights. We're going to wage war as a nation. We're going to print money as one common money. We're going to treaty with other nations as a nation, but each state keeps its federal individual sovereign status unless it interferes with something the federal government's doing. So James Madison says this, the idea of a national government involves in it not only an authority over the individual citizens, but an indefinite supremacy over all persons and things, so far as they are object of lawful government. Among a people consolidated into one nation, this supremacy is completely vested in the national legislature. In this relation, then, the proposed government cannot be deemed a national one, since its jurisdiction extends to certain enumerated objects only. And what I'm getting at is, what they're saying is that if you can nationalize citizenship, make everyone a citizen of the nation, rather than a citizen of their state, then Congress, the national legislature, would have an indefinite supremacy over all persons and things. I'm going to show you a little law graph. This is how this nation was originally set up. We were set up, and this is the Creator created. God is the Creator. He created, you know, God's laws, and everything below cannot violate the Creator. Can God's laws violate God? No. Okay, He created man. We're not supposed to violate God's laws, but have we? Yes, we have. We have fallen man. But we're not supposed to violate God or God's laws. God allows us to make our own laws, organize our affairs how we want. In this country, we originally had the original state constitutions by the state citizens. They created the federal government. Now, the way this graph operates, this is Article 1 through 7, the Bill of Rights 1 through 10. And each one of these squares is a lawful delegation of authority. They're operating within their bounds. And what I'm here to say is that there's a spot right there where an unconstitutional act, this is the point that we want to be looking at. Something happened right there that created, and all these circles are unconstitutional operations, laws, agencies, things of this nature. So what we want to do is we want to look at that spot right there, because right now we got hundreds of thousands of people spending hundreds of thousands of man hours. Like, here's the Second Amendment fighting, you know, Brady Bill or all sorts of things, fighting all these different things, and we want people fighting one thing. Because this is the way our government sits today, is we have the federal government's on top, the states are below it, and God's on the bottom. Everything's been flipped upside down. This is the way. And it's all based on all these unconstitutional acts are at the top and are controlling what's going on. I want you to start seeing something. I'm going to start showing you some court cases. I want you to start seeing where they get their authority to make the ruling. Lawrence versus Texas struck down the sodomy laws in 2003. Gets it's a violation of the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. It gets its authority to rule on that based upon a violation of the 14th Amendment. Roe versus Wade violated the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. FEMA, another one of those agencies created. Stone versus Graham, display of the Ten Commandments on public property is unconstitutional through the 14th Amendment. Therefore, it's unconstitutional as violating the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. And it goes on to say, as applied to the states through the 14th Amendment. Department of Education, indoctrination. Abington School versus Shemp, Murray versus Corlette, Madeline Murray O'Hare taking prayer out of school. We hold that each of these, that the practices at issue and the laws requiring them are unconstitutional under the Establishment Clause as applied to the states through the 14th Amendment. Department of Energy is another one of those usurpations, doesn't need to be there. Wong Kim Ark. This Wong Kim Ark was a Chinaman born in the United States. And this is the case that what we people call anchor babies, where if you're born here, you become a citizen. Okay? So that ruling that if you're born here, you become a citizen, and this is one of the only countries that does this. Okay, don't think this is anywhere else. It says all persons born or naturalized, well, basically, it gets by virtue of the first clause of the 14th Amendment gives birthright here citizenship, this new change. What we want to do is if we can attack that one spot, and we're going to say that that one spot is the Reconstruction Acts of March 2nd, 1867. We say that is the unconstitutional act that did all this. And if we can attack that one spot right there and have that declared unconstitutional, we get rid of all the usurpations, we put our nation back in place, because none of those things, unconstitutional act creates nothing. There's no authority for these to exist anymore.
It's time now for a word from our sponsors. We urge you to support them with your business and thank them for bringing you CCTA Wake Up Call.
Baldwin's Transmissions and Auto Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call or stop by the shop on Highway 17 South in New Bern. Baldwin will give you the options. They can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they'll rebuild your existing transmission if that's what you prefer. Baldwin also does a variety of minor auto repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pumps. Count on Baldwin Transmission and Auto Repair, your transmission physician, Highway 17 South in New Bern. For fresh, delicious seafood, come to Redfish Seafood Market on Highway 55 East in Grantsboro. We've got a big variety to choose from. Do you like shrimp, scallops, salmon? We've got them. We've got all sorts of fish. Right now, come for the soft-shell crabs from our place. Sausage and salmon we smoked with pecan wood, devil crabs, and even peanuts we boil ourselves. You can also pick up seafood seasoning, flavorful breading, and sauces at Redfish Seafood Market, Highway 55 East in Grantsboro, across from the Dollar Tree. Open Monday through Saturday from 10 till 6. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military, just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call as we rejoin our presentation by John Ainsworth and Cliff Muncy of America's Remedy.
I want to give a quick timeline of the Civil War. There's a lot I have to leave out. I got to leave out the unconstitutionality of the war. I've got to leave out, you know, Lincoln's actions. I got to just leave out so much stuff. But let's just look at the war. The war was basically over. Congress passed an object of the war. Said the war was not for any purpose of conquest or subjugation. Congress did not recognize, and Lincoln did not recognize, the ordinances of secession to be valid, and said they're null and void. That all the southern states, North Carolina, they're still in the Union. You've never left. You're merely in rebellion to lawful authority. Because if they left the Union, it'd be a war against a foreign nation. So they had to say, you've never left the Union. So the war was fought entirely on the concept that the southern states never left the Union. We'll talk a little bit about North Carolina. What happened with North Carolina? And this gets into the war. It says, we held a state election on February 28, 1861, on whether to hold a convention on secession. Remember, Abraham Lincoln is inaugurated March 4th. There was a call for a convention, was defeated by 651 votes. North Carolina had voted basically to stay in the Union. This is a week before Abraham Lincoln's inaugurated. Citizens held the belief that the federal government could not force one state to wage war on another. Article 3, Section 3, treason consists only in levying war against states. April 12th, Fort Sumter is fired upon. April 15th, Lincoln calls on Governor Ellis to provide two regiments of troops. War is inevitable. North Carolina must decide whether to fight the North or the South. And let's look at this little correspondence from Mr. Lincoln himself. He sent a correspondence to John Ellis calling for two regiments of troops to put down the rebellion of the seceded states. And John Ellis said, I can be no party to this wicked violation of the laws of this country and to this war upon the liberties of free people. You can get no troops from North Carolina. We did not secede to keep slaves. We seceded because it was very apparent Abraham Lincoln had no intention of guaranteeing the securities to the states as guaranteed in the Constitution. And we seceded on May 20th. 1861. So again, I just want to fast forward to the end of the war, to the Reconstruction Acts. The war is basically over in April of 1865. 1866, peace is declared by presidential proclamation. In 1865, in December of 1865, the 13th Amendment abolishing slavery is ratified and passed. North Carolina is considered back in the Union in December of 1865 to the degree that Congress sent them a proposed amendment to the Constitution, and they said, okay, we're going to vote. And North Carolina voted on it, I believe it was December 8th, 1861, and it became part of the National Constitution. So North Carolina is in the Union December 1865. 1866, peace is declared. June of 1866, Congress proposes the 14th Amendment. Remember that one I was showing you all those court cases on? They proposed the 14th Amendment. Only one of the former southern states adopted it, and that was Tennessee. The 14th Amendment was going to nationalize citizenship. Remember I showed you what nationalized citizenship does with James Madison in the Federalist Papers. So you've got the 14th Amendment being proposed in June of 1866. The southern states, 10 of them, say, no, we're not going to participate in it. So what does Congress do? They changed the object of the war 2 years after the war was over. They said, we believe it was for conquest. We believe we conquered the southern states. They're conquered territories. We're going to reduce them to territories. And they did that in 1867. How many people knew that's what the Reconstruction Acts were about? And the sole purpose of the Reconstruction Acts was to make sure the 14th Amendment is ratified. And I'm going to show that to you. Here is the Reconstruction Acts. Now, a lot of people say that North Carolina was readmitted. You know, we seceded and therefore we were readmitted. Secession was considered a nullity. The whole war was based on we were not in the Union. We were not out of the Union. Okay? What got us out of the Union? What got North Carolina out of the Union? This one sentence, whereas no legal state governments or adequate protection of life or property now exist, and now I'll go to this one here, in the states of North Carolina, until loyal and Republican state governments can be legally established. Now they're going for loyal governments to Congress rather than to the state. This is an act of Congress. I want you to see if you can see any unconstitutionality. Does Congress have the authority just by decree? Because this is the sentence that took North Carolina out of the Union. Whereas no legal, they just decreed, you're out of the Union, you're not a state. Is that unconstitutional? Where's that power granted? I say you have a constitutional violation right there. But let's go to Section 5 of the Reconstruction Acts. It says that, and what they're doing is they're saying that you're a territory now, North Carolina. And this did not apply to Tennessee, because Tennessee adopted the 14th Amendment. It says you're not a territory, you're a territory. In order to become a state, you have to have a new convention. And it says, when the people of any one set of the rebel states shall have formed a constitution of government in conformity with the Constitution of the United States, except such as may be disfranchised for participation in rebellion. So what this is, anyone who participated in the rebellion, in the war in North Carolina, you weren't allowed to vote. Is that putting a government for the people of North Carolina in place? No, it's putting sympathizers to Congress in place. It says, and when said state, this new state that Congress is creating, by a vote of its legislature, shall have adopted the amendment to the Constitution proposed by the 39th Congress and known as Article 14, the 14th Amendment, and when such article shall have become part of the Constitution of the United States, said state shall be declared entitled to representation in Congress. So what they're saying is, we proposed the 14th Amendment in June, y'all denied it, we're going to annul you, and we're going to make a condition for you to come back in the Union is you're required to adopt the 14th Amendment, and it's required to become part of the national constitution before you can seat senators and representatives. How many people were taught this in school? How many people see this as unconstitutional? There's no authority. This is what we're hacking at. They had no authority to do this. Here's Article 5 of the Constitution. How do you amend the Constitution? Congress shall propose amendments to the Constitution, which shall be valid for all intents and purposes, provided that no state without its consent shall be deprived of equal suffrage in the Senate. There were no senators sitting in any of those 10 states when this amendment was done. Did it follow the amending process? Is this the way we amend the Constitution? If Congress has enough power to sit there and just declare states nullity until they get the majority that they want? This is what we're living under today. The Journal for the Committee of 15 on Reconstruction. This is the committee that's going to push Reconstruction. I'm going to start showing you this concept of nationalizing citizenship, nationalizing civil rights. We've got this concept of civil rights, and civil rights are out there, and we have this Pavlovian response, and when we hear the term civil rights, we got to say, oh, those are great, it's for the black people, and we want to find out whether that's true or not, because maybe they're not for just blacks to give them civil rights. Maybe it's to nationalize everyone and take away all of our rights. But I'm just going to propose that. I want you guys to see if maybe that's what's happening here. So here is the Journal of the Committee 15 on Reconstruction. They give a little bio on some of the guys that were on the committee. And this is a bio on John Bingham. And he says, as has been said, he particularly desired to have the civil rights of the individual put in the special keeping of the national government. And it is not too much to say that had it not been for his untiring efforts, the provision for nationalizing civil rights would not have found a place in the 14th Amendment. Sound like they're trying to nationalize citizenship? Civil rights should properly be called national rights. Rights you get from the nation. Let's keep going. James G. Blaine, radical Republican in Congress. He was one of the senators from Maine. He gave a speech in August of 1866. Remember, the 14th Amendment was proposed in June, so this is only a month later. He's going to his constituency. Reconstruction hadn't happened yet. And he says, in making this extension of citizenship, and this is United States citizenship, is what I'm talking about. Are you a United States? That status did not exist when this nation was, or when this federal union was founded. It was created in 1866, this status. So he said, in making this extension of citizenship, we are not confining the breadth and scope of our efforts to the Negro. It is for the white man as well. We intend to make citizenship national. This is a sitting United States congressman. In his autobiography, he goes on. He says, as the vicious theory of state rights had been constantly at enmity with the true spirit of nationality, the organic law of the Republic, which is the Constitution, should be so amended that no standing room for the heresy would be left. The first section of the constitutional amendment, which includes these invaluable provisions, is in fact a new charter of liberty to the citizens of the United States, is the utter destruction of the pestilent heresy of state rights, which constantly menace the prosperity and even the existence of the Republic, and is the formal bestowment of nationality upon our system. They're proud of this. He goes on. He says, he's talking about these new state constitutions like North Carolina's, this new constitution put into place by Reconstruction. He says, all were ordained in the spirit of liberty, all prohibited the existence of any form of slavery, and all heartily recognized the supreme sovereignty of the national government as having been indisputably established by the overthrow of the rebellion, which was undertaken to confirm the adverse theory of state rights. He's not done.
All right, we're going to have to take a break right here to hear from our sponsors. Hope you're enjoying the program. Please stay tuned and come back and hear some more from John Ainsworth on the 14th Amendment.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition established by Tommy and David Moore's parents over 70 years ago. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week at our three locations in New Bern, Winterville, and Moorhead City. We also cater and deliver to your home, workplace, church, or school, anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call as we continue with the presentation by John Ainsworth of America's Remedy.
Again, the 14th Amendment, and this gives the opening section of the 14th Amendment, settle all conflicts and contradictions on this question. And the question is, where do your rights come from? Where does your citizenship come from? Does it come from your state or does it come from Congress? Come from your state or from Congress? He says the opening section set a law conflicts and contradictions on this question by a comprehensive declaration which defined national citizenship and gave to it precedence of the citizenship of a state. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the states wherein they reside. These pregnant words distinctly reverse the origin and character of American citizenship. Instead of a man being a citizen of the United States because he was a citizen of one of the states, he is now made a citizen of any state in which he might choose to reside because he was antecedently a citizen of the United States. The consequences that flowed from this radical change in the basis of citizenship are numerous and weighty. It's a radical change. Well, do you think that something of this nature, maybe there were some constitutional challenges to the Supreme Court? Yes, there were. There were four of them. I'm only going to go over two of them. This is Georgia v. Stanton. Here's what the Supreme Court ruled. The state of Georgia is going up saying, because what the Reconstruction Acts did, you had the states that were in place, well, they redeployed the military to the states to militarily take them over and control them as a territory, again, 2 years after the war is over. And so the state of Georgia is saying, Supreme Court, you got to stop this deployment of the military into our states. And here's what the Supreme Court said. A bill to restrain the defendants who represent the executive authority of the government from carrying into execution certain acts of Congress, the Reconstruction Acts, inasmuch as such execution would annul and totally abolish the existing state government of Georgia, is not within the jurisdiction of this court. Federalist Papers tell us that the Supreme Court is supposed to be a bulwark between the people and an over-encroaching federal government. Are they acting as a bulwark here? No. And they actually did a whole lot worse. We'll go to the next case. This is the case that should curl your hair. I haven't even shown you things that should curl your hair yet. This one will. Ex parte McCarville. McCarville was an editor of a Mississippi newspaper, writing in his paper against the Reconstruction Acts, this new government that's being forced upon him. Well, all the Reconstruction Acts were vetoed by the president, Andrew Johnson. He said they're unconstitutional. Who drafts his vetoes? The Attorney General. Okay, so the Attorney General has told him these are unconstitutional, drafts his vetoes. Well, who is supposed to defend the United States in an action against it? The Attorney General. Well, ex parte McCarville, they're challenging the Reconstruction Acts. That means the Attorney General is supposed to support the Reconstruction Acts. Well, he said this. The Attorney General was Henry Stanberry. And this is out of the New York Times, the case of William H. McCarville. And it says, he had, in accordance with his convictions, answered that they were illegal and void, and had advised the president not to approve them. This being his opinion, he could not, of course, take the other side of the question. Therefore, he had to decline to argue it here. He had left it to be argued by those who believed in the doctrine. He had given notice to General Grant, in consequence of which other counsel had been employed. He basically told the War Department, go hire an attorney. The Attorney General is not defending this. We don't believe in it. Well, who defended McCardle, saying Reconstruction Acts are unconstitutional? Jeremiah Black. Who's Jeremiah Black? He was Chief Justice of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, United States Attorney General, United States Secretary of State. This guy know the law? Yes. He's saying Reconstruction is unconstitutional. He's defending McCardle. He says this, and this is actual the debate before the Supreme Court. So this is published in the New York Times, March 3rd, 1868. You can go look it up. A state election was going on, which was superintended entirely by the Army, which by means of bayonet drove one set of voters to the polls and drove another away from them. Remember, all the people who participated in the war, you're not allowed to vote. Drove them away. The whole thing was accomplished by naked terrorism. And when an unarmed and peaceable man expressed his opposition to such proceedings through his own newspaper, he was told he should not do so and was ordered into custody. Which of the two parties was guilty of intimidation, the accused or the accuser? It was said McCardle hindered Reconstruction. He says, Congress desired that a certain constitution or form of government should be adopted and submitted to the people for their decision, or it was submitted to a portion only of the people of Mississippi. The act of Congress made a show for the expression of approbation or disapprobation, approval or disapproval. McCardle was not among those who were in favor of that constitution. This is said to be hindering Reconstruction, the commission of a crime which there was a right to punish. He says, these acts of Congress admitted to no shade of ambiguity. They were intended to deny the regular administration of justice to one section of the country. If these acts are valid, then the trial by a jury was abolished in 10 states of the Union and might be abolished in all the remainder when Congress might think proper. There was no chance of the people escaping from the body of this death except by saying that Reconstruction Acts are null and void. Okay? He's saying they're null and void. Former Supreme Court Chief Supreme Court Chief of the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania. Well, who defended the United States government? A guy by the name of Lyman Trumbull, and he was a senator, a sitting senator from Illinois. What do we think about senators from Illinois in general? I mean, might be some issues there. Senator from Illinois. And basically, he argued that I shall commence what I have to say by denying the jurisdiction of the court to hear this case. And if I establish that proposition, of course, the court cannot entertain jurisdiction of it. The propositions which I have endeavored to maintain are first, that the court has no jurisdiction of the case because the Act of February 5th, 1867 did not authorize the circuit court to take jurisdiction of it. He's basically saying the courts don't have jurisdiction to hear this. He's not arguing they're constitutional. He's just saying the courts don't have jurisdiction to hear it. Well, who do you think is going to win this case? It was argued for 3 days before the United States Supreme Court. Clearly, there's no constitutionality. So what does Lyman Trumbull do? He's a sitting to United States Senator. He goes across the street from the Supreme Court over to the U.S. Congress and gets his buddies together, and they enact a law to take away the jurisdiction of the court to make a ruling on this case. Okay? Let's see how that goes over. This is out of the Congressional Record, actually Congressional Globe at the time. This is his floor debate talking about this legislation that's going to take away the Supreme Court's jurisdiction. He says, in my judgment, there's no such great importance to be attached to it. It's a bill of very little importance in my judgment, and I wish to say to the senator from Maryland that the Supreme Court has not decided that any case is pending before it under the Act of February 5th, 1867. No such decision has been made, nor do I believe any such decision would ever be made. Now, there is no such case that is pending in the Supreme Court, and there has been no such case pending in the Supreme Court. He argued it days before. This is a bald-faced lie. Well, he gets called out. This is Senator Doolittle of Wisconsin. He says, Mr. President, my honorable friend from Illinois seems to think that there is no importance in this measure, that it affects nothing and nobody, that there is no case pending in the Supreme Court which this act will affect, that it is a mistake and a delusion on our part to suppose that there is any such case under the law of 1867. Well, sir, if he be correct in this, why the great haste in pressing the bill? Sir, I apprehend that the Honorable Senator from Illinois is altogether mistaken in his view, which he now presents, that this is a very important measure, that there is a very important case pending in the Supreme Court under the act which it is now proposed to repeal. The Honorable Senator himself, as counsel in that court, he argued it, if I am correctly informed, with other counsel, made a motion to dismiss a case pending in the Supreme Court or alleged to be pending under this act, and the court refused to dismiss it. We all know, the whole world knows, this case of McCardle is pending in the Supreme Court, brought up on appeal under the Act of 1867 from the Circuit Court of Mississippi, and that that case has been argued by eminent counsel, and that it is pending. It is important because the case involves the constitutionality of the Reconstruction Acts. It involves the constitutionality of these acts, which have been passed by Congress. If there be no such case before the court, why does the Honorable Senator desire to pass a bill to take away jurisdiction of a case which does not exist? Mr. President, the truth is, and we may as well look it square in the face, is because men know that these acts will be decided to be unconstitutional. That is the reason why they desire to take away from the court the consideration of the question. Now, let's fast forward to where we are today. There's a book, Landmark Cases of the Supreme Court, modern book, and this is how it summarizes the arguments on behalf. This is the McCardle case, and it summarizes it with this. It says, while the case was under advisement, Congress passed an act taking away the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court as defined by the Act of February 1867 in cases of habeas corpus, and the appeal was therefore dismissed for want of jurisdiction. McCardle was thereupon discharged, and this is what I want everyone to read. And no further attempt has been made to test the constitutionality of the Reconstruction Act, which nationalized citizenship and gave Congress supreme sovereignty over all people. What we're about is outside the box, challenging the constitutionality of Reconstruction. Who's the injured party in Reconstruction when they annul the states? Original state citizens. Are United States citizens an injured party? No, they're a creation of Reconstruction. They're a beneficiary of the law, okay? The injured parties are the original states. Are any original states in place today? One, us, okay? And we're challenging this.
It's time again to hear from our sponsors, so please stay tuned. Visit our sponsors. Tell them you heard about them here on CCTA Wake Up Call. When we come back, we'll continue this presentation by John Ainsworth of America's Remedy.
Baldwin's Transmissions and Auto Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call or stop by the shop on Highway 17 South in New Bern. Baldwin will give you the options. They can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they'll rebuild your existing transmission if that's what you prefer. Baldwin also does a variety of minor auto repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pumps. Count on Baldwin Transmission and Auto Repair, your transmission physician, Highway 17 South in New Bern. For fresh, delicious seafood, come to Redfish Seafood Market on Highway 55 East in Grantsboro. We've got a big variety to choose from. Do you like shrimp, scallops, salmon? We've got them. We've got all sorts of fish. Right now, come for the soft-shell crabs from our place. Sausage and salmon we've smoked with pecan wood, devil crabs, and even peanuts we boil ourselves. You can also pick up seafood seasoning, flavorful breading, and sauces at Redfish Seafood Market, Highway 55 East in Grantsboro, across from the Dollar Tree. Open Monday through Saturday from 10 till 6.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition established by Tommy and David Moore's parents over 70 years ago. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week at our three locations in New Bern, Winterville, and Moorhead City. We also cater and deliver to your home, workplace, church, or school, anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Panicelli's Pizzeria in River Bend features delicious handmade Italian dishes like lasagna, spaghetti, fettuccine alfredo, stromboli, calzone, and many more. And now Panicelli's has home delivery. Panicelli's uses only the freshest ingredients, and they have fantastic New York-style pizza in four sizes or by the slice. Panicelli's Pizzeria also has great salads and subs. So today, head to River Bend, and Panicelli's is at 40 Shoreline Drive, or call Panicelli's Pizzeria for home delivery.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call, the place where patriots come to talk.
Let's look at North Carolina. How was this government of North Carolina from the original Constitution to this new Constitution? How was it changed? What actions took place? This is a military order. This is a military order from Brevet Lieutenant Colonel United States Army Williams to Jonathan Worth, Governor of North Carolina, talking about General Order Number 120, removing him from office. Military order is removing the Governor of North Carolina from office. And he sends that to the Governor. How many people have ever been taught about the surrender letter of the state of North Carolina? Never. Okay, good. Got one. Okay. Here it is. July 1st, 1868. When was the war over? 1865. North Carolina was considered back in the Union in 1865. 1866, we were considered in the Union. 1867, they annulled us. And now, 1868, something's about to happen. Here's the text of this letter. I'm just going to read the one section of it, because this is the surrender of the original state. And what's a state? That's the body politic and everything, and their government of North Carolina. He says, and it's from the governor of North Carolina to the governor of North Carolina. Okay? It says, I do not recognize the validity of the late election under which you and those cooperating with you claim to be invested with the civil government of the state. You have no evidence of your election save the certificate of a major general of the United States Army. I regard all of you as, in effect, appointees of the military power of the United States and not as deriving your powers from the consent of those you claim to govern. Knowing, however, that you are backed by military force here, which I could not resist if I would, I do not deem it necessary to offer a futile opposition, but vacate the office without the ceremony of actual eviction, offering no further opposition than this, my protest. I would submit to actual expulsion in order to bring before the Supreme Court of the United States the question as to the constitutionality of the legislation on which you claim to be the rightful governor of the state, if the past action of that tribunal furnished any hope of a speedy trial. We saw what the Supreme Court was doing. He's not getting a lot of hope by looking at the Supreme Court. He says, I surrendered the office to you under what I deem military duress, without stopping, as the occasion would well justify, to comment upon the singular coincidence that the present state government is surrendered, as without legality to him whose own official sanction but 3 years ago declared it valid. Anybody see a legal challenge that might could come up here, see anything illegal that happened in this time frame that we might have some remedy and we can get back to our lawful foundation? Is the law a radical way to redress your rights and get your rights vindicated? All we've got is a legal argument, but you have to have standing. Injured party, you have to have states. Well, remember that said that has never got before the Supreme Court, has never been challenged? We got it to the Supreme Court in January of 2012. And I'm not going to go over a lot of it, but this is, did Congress exceed its limited enumerated powers when, through the Reconstruction Act, it authorized military force to nullify the constitutional government of North Carolina? We got this to the United States Supreme Court in 2012. They chose not to hear it. You know, they get to pick and choose what they want to hear. These are the parties, the petitioner, and again, this is one of our citizens. He was declared a citizen of the original state of North Carolina. His oath of allegiance was the original Constitution of North Carolina, because he does not recognize the Constitution that was put in place by Reconstruction, which is the one still in operation. And I know we got a lot of politicians in here and stuff, but we got to call it, you know, the truth, the truth. We're going to get remedy when we all learn what the truth is. And let's look at some of the Supreme Court rulings on the 14th Amendment. Elk versus Wilkins, 1884. The persons declared to be citizens are all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof. The evident meaning of these last words is not merely subject in some respect or degree to the jurisdiction of the United States, and we're talking about United States citizens, but completely subject to their political jurisdiction and owing them direct and immediate allegiance. And let's just do a little quick recap. The idea of a national government involves in it an indefinite supremacy over all persons and things. This supremacy is completely vested in the national legislature. This is our problem. This is how they got a hold of us. We have to attack this. We don't have enough time to go through all the information that we've got. Believe it or not, I've got 10 times more information than this to help flush all this stuff out. Will the video? Show a little quick video here. If we did have national government or national citizenship, how much power would the federal government have over the individual citizen? If you nationalize citizenship, they would have an indefinite supremacy over all persons and things. This is what our founding fathers said would happen if it evolved into that. It was the 14th Amendment and Reconstruction Act designed for the freed slaves, or were they designed to nationalize citizenship? That's what we've got to try to decide. Well, let's go to the writings. James G. Blaine, he was one of the representatives in Congress. He says, and in making this extension of citizenship, we are not confining the breadth and scope of our efforts to the Negro. It is for the white man as well. We intend to make citizenship national. Okay? He also said this in his books, in his autobiography. He says, as the vicious theory of state rights had been constantly at enmity with the true spirit of nationality, the organic law of the Republic, which is the Constitution, should be so amended that no standing room for the heresy would be left. Because get rid of state rights. Again, if you get rid of state citizenship, make everyone a citizen of Congress, there are no independent states. They're all composed of United States citizens rather than North Carolinians, South Carolinians, Virginians. Lawrence versus Texas, which struck down the sodomy laws, it violated the due process clause of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. Roe versus Wade. State criminal abortion law violated the due process clause of the 14th Amendment. Stone versus Graham, it takes away the 10 commandments. Violation of the 14th Amendment. Abington School versus Shemp, same thing. Again, they get their power to make the ruling through the 14th Amendment. the idea of a national government involved in it, an authority over the individual citizens, and an indefinite supremacy over all persons and things. This supremacy is completely vested in the national legislature. But he said that's not what the intention was. But now, that's what we've got. We have two directions we can go in. We can say, this is water under the bridge. Nothing we can do about it. So therefore, here we are. We've just got to do the best we can in this situation. But the problem with that is, we're always looking at the original intent of the Constitution, saying we've got those rights when they're really overthrown by this legislation.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
There's something for everyone at Stingray Cafe in New Bern. For the seafood lover, there are oysters, shrimp, scallops, clams, crabs, snow crab legs, and a wide variety of fish. Not in the mood for seafood? How about a salad, a burger, beef brisket, or some good old hickory smoked barbecue? There's even a menu section for folks 10 and younger. Open 7 days a week to Stingray Cafe on South Front Street in New Bern, just across the street from the History Center.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. Well, I hope you enjoyed today's program. It was, again, presented by America's Remedy. They spoke at our regular monthly public meeting, the third Tuesday of each month, at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern. It's free and open to the public. Cliff Muncy and John Ainsworth presenting. Sorry we didn't get to Cliff Muncy's part of it. We just didn't have time in today's program, so we'll pick up with that next week. That's all the time we have for today. Please join us again next week for CCTA Wake Up Call.
The CCTA appreciates their sponsors because their support makes it possible for Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association to bring you Wake Up Call every Sunday. Those sponsors include Professional Auto Services on Country Club Road in New Bern, Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutrition consultant, Panicelli's Pizzeria in River Bend. Other great supporters are RightWingGranny.com with a unique perspective on the news, B&J Seafood on US 70 in New Bern, the North Carolina Fisheries Association, Stingray Cafe, South Front Street, New Bern, Baldwin Transmission, Transmission and Auto Repair on Highway 17 South in New Bern and Redfish Seafood Market, Highway 55 Grantsboro. Also, the County Compass serving Pamlico, Beaufort, Craven, and Carteret counties. Dr. J. Singleton. Moore's Old Time Barbecue. Force 5 Marine Saltwater Corrosion Inhibitor. Join us again next week at this time for your wake-up call from the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, online at cctaxpayers.com.